But alone, he wouldn't do that any longer. She might not want to talk to him at first, but he felt confident he could persuade her to speak at least one more time, if she was still alive. His pulse increased as he thought of what terrible feeling would befall him if he called for her without a response. He certainly wouldn't be able to sleep, but that was of little concern right now. Her life was at stake. Calling to her was as easy as shouting. He still wasn't sure if any sounds could be made in this place above the sizzling all around him that was somehow as consistently silent as it was noisy. There were different rules to this plane, that was for sure. There was no such thing as falling. Things didn't drop to the ground. Dessel could float wherever he pleased. New senses were still to be explored. Normally in the physical plane, a pleasant aroma would make him sniff the air, or the sound of someone singing might cause him to stop whatever he was doing and listen. Odors and sounds beckoned to him in the same way here, only they presented themselves as shifts of energy, like the wind changing. Dessel didn't just feel that he understood them, he knew for sure they were telling him something about the physical plane. The world he'd been born into seemed simple compared to this one. He couldn't help but feel that gazing at the clouds of energy over the sizzling bright terrain was like looking at the inside of a clock. There were no answers for him to take without an expert explaining it all, and yet the longer he glimpsed, the more subtleties he felt he understood. Contacting Lyda, for example, had gone from possible to simple. He just needed to project his mind in her direction in the same way he did his voice. Lyda! He called upon her for several long minutes without pause. Finally, she answered.
Dessel, are you all right?
Yes. What about you?
She didn't answer at first.
Did you come here just to talk about nothing?
No, I have a purpose. First, tell me how you are.
Not well. How many days have passed since we last spoke?
A few.
That's all?
He felt something from her that he assumed to be despair. It came in a wave of transparent blue energy just rising above the horizon before sinking back below it.
Don't give up yet, he told her. We will build this weapon soon, and then we can get you out of there.
Fatal knows where you are.
Dessel's shock came out from his energy cloud as ripples of red.
How could he?
Because you're in the last place my father hasn't looked. He and Fatal both agree that you must be with the Kreps.
Dessel cursed.
And why aren't they here yet?
Assume Fatal plans carefully. He sees no reason to rush. My father is imprisoned with me as we wait. He's the only thing keeping me sane, besides.
Besides what?
Pointless hopes I can't seem to let go of.
Don't let go. Hold on tighter.
Fatal will kill me if my father doesn't bring the Akaral to him. I told myself I would die before my father found you, but I failed. I stopped taking in food and water, but they forced me to drink and eat. It is a form of torture in its own way. I don't dare challenge them in that way any longer.
Dessel felt a tear slide down his cheek in the physical plane. It nearly pulled him out of this place.
If they already know we're here, then I can share my stories from this place with you.
Dessel, don't do that.
He ignored her comment.
The Kreps wouldn't let us in when we first arrived until we proved that we could beat them in combat. We then had to convince them to let us stay by suggesting that we would fight them for sport. Kurnitz has taken on 10 every day since then, and he hasn't lost yet. The Kreps are the most absurd creatures you can imagine, Lyda. They all think they're going to be the first one to beat Kurnitz, enjoying the attention as they enter the arena. Then most leave in shame, spitting and sometimes throwing their weapon like a petulant child.
He felt nothing from Lyda, but he continued.
One of them tried to jump over the fence to get into the arena, but part of it collapsed because other Kreps had prepared it to do so. He got angry with them and a fight broke out between him and a female. She won, so she took his weapon, as well as his place in the arena, and then faced Kurnitz, even though their leader had chosen the other Kreps to fight. She held her sword with her feet and stood on her hands, clearly to taunt Kurnitz, but he surprised her by engaging before she could switch and easily won.
He felt laughter from the horizon as he continued.
Kurnitz deflected her weapon with so much force that it flung into the audience and stuck into one of the watching Kreps' shoulders. The Kreps shrieked as others carried him away. Kurnitz looked at their leader with horror, worried some punishment would befall him, but their leader only looked back at Kurnitz as if wondering why he wasn't continuing to fight. It was ridiculous, Lyda. Each event is more absurd than the last, and yet none of the Kreps seem surprised by anything that happens. After that sword flew into the audience, I asked one of the Kreps, who speaks common tongue, if this kind of thing is normal.
It is. I don't know why they don't at least make the fence taller and more protective. It's just a few logs stacked on top of each other.
Lyda's laughter grew stronger, but Dezel's mind was starting to fatigue.
"I've so much more to tell you," he said. "In fact, I'm quite sure that Kernich and Beatrix have lain together by now."
"Are you certain?"
There was a change in her tone, her interest as plain as the buzzing energy beneath Dezel's spirit cloud.
"Almost. I'll tell you what I've seen and let you decide. I have to return to the physical plane to regain my stamina, though."
"I do as well. I'll meet you back here soon."
"Good."
Dezel returned to his body with tears streaming from his eyes. He laughed with joy. It felt as if Lyda had come back from the dead. He was glad for all of his strange experiences in the Crepan colony, and he was even more glad that Basin and Fatal had figured out that he was here. It was bound to happen eventually, and now Dezel had no reason to keep anything from Lyda except for the exact location of the Akaral. He returned to the other plane when he'd regained his breath. He called for her, but she didn't answer. He worried, until her presence became known to him and she called out his name. He spent hours going back and forth, between the planes, talking about everything from his brief conversation with Adria to his recent spotting of Micklin. There were so many small things he left out that he meant to come back to, but Lyda's reactions and questions often led them down another path of conversation. Eventually, Lyda told Dezel that she wouldn't listen to any more because he must spend some of this night sleeping.
"Only if you promise that we will speak again as soon as I wake up," Dezel said.
"I look forward to it."
"Then good night."
"Good night."
Dezel returned to the physical plane. He wasn't sure he could sleep wearing such a smile. Her energy had changed. At first he'd felt nothing except her presence, but now her energy had too many nuances to determine what any of them meant. All were as interesting as they were strong, like the first scent after walking into a perfume shop. Since then, Dezel had taken more time to concentrate on each sensation. But they'd done nothing but make him more curious. He felt like a baby, witnessing different colors, sounds, and aromas for the first time. None of it was familiar, yet all of it was wonderful. Good thing for his fatigue, or he never would have fallen into a slumber. He awoke a short time later to the crackling sound of fire. His first inhale was heavy with the dry scratch of smoke.
Fire!
It was no accident. Micklin had found them. Dezel ran to the next bedroom. Beatrix was already sitting up in bed, her hands out.
"Get up, Kernich," she called. "They started a fire."
Kernich jumped up from beside her.
"Where is it?"
"I don't know yet."
"How many are there?"
Dezel asked.
"Only about a dozen," the princess replied.
"Where are they?"
"All around us."
"Where specifically, Beatrix?"
Dezel needed to know. The fire must be working its way through from the outer walls. He saw no signs of it yet. Beatrix rushed out of the bedroom to put herself in the middle of the small home. She pointed in one direction at a time, three times in total.
"Here, here, and here."
Kernich came out while strapping on his armor.
"It may be scratched and torn, but the two of you need to put on the leather we got from Basin."
"They're guarding the windows and the door,"
Dezel said as he grabbed his armor and brought it back out.
"They won't kill us until we tell them where the Akaral is,"
Beatrix said as she started putting her own armor on. Kernich helped her as he was the first to finish.
"They can still kill two of us," Dezel told her. "We have to leave through one of the corners to have any chance of escape."
Dezel headed toward the southeastern side and put his hands against the wall. It was cold to his touch.
"Are any on the other side, Beatrix?"
"No, but they are close."
Dezel split his mind between the planes. He needed great power, beckoning for it with greed. He took all that he could get and hoped it would be enough. It wasn't just his own life that was in his hands. Beatrix and Kernich waited behind for him to act.
"You can change the walls?"
Kernich asked.
"No, there's not enough natural wood."
Even if there was, Dezel wasn't sure he could scoop it out quickly enough to escape before someone saw.
"We have to go under."
"It will take too long to dig, even if it's soft,"
the warrior pointed out.
"Which is why I have to make it a liquid. We swim through."
"Can we really swim in dirt?"
"I'll go first to find out,"
Beatrix offered bravely.
"Bastial hell you will."
Kernich pushed her out of the way.
"We go at the same time," Dezel said.
"Are you sure you can make enough of it liquid to fit all of us?"
"Yes. Get ready."
Dezel connected to the ground in front of his feet, grasping hold of all the dirt in a short radius. He commanded it to be liquid.
"Jump high to make sure you sink far into it. Go now."
The three of them leapt. Dezel fell into the ground with his eyes and mouth shut. It did not feel like water, but spongy sand. Dessel couldn't wade through it like he could water, for it pushed back against him. He would have had no idea how deep he'd fallen if he wasn't the one altering its state. He kept the ground solid at the surface above and a couple meters below, giving his comrades' feet something to stand on. He knew they must be even more lost and panicked than he was, so he forced himself to relax and took a turn instead of going forward. With a swimming motion doing little, only his feet against the hard ground propelled him. Kernich was the first one to Dessel's right. Dessel got his hands on the warrior's back to figure out where his feet might be. Kernich stopped flailing as he felt Dessel. Once the ground was set with the right inclination, Dessel gave Kernich a firm push. He did so until he could no longer feel Kernich and hoped his work was done with the warrior. Dessel found Beatrix next. She was much shorter and hadn't sunken as deep. His hands found the back of her thighs first. He stepped off hardened ground beneath him to match her level, ensuring there was a place for her feet, with an inclination as well. He pushed against her back until she set off. Dessel stayed behind her, pushing and guiding, until they caught up to Kernich. With his other hand, Dessel pushed both of them up and forward. It was slow going, the liquid dirt more stubborn than water. Dessel imagined it wasn't too different than trying to swim in oatmeal. More than anything, they sank. Dessel imagined they would fall nearly endlessly if he were to continuously liquefy the dirt beneath them, rather than keep it hard. Soon Dessel emerged through the surface behind Beatrix and Kernich. He might have enjoyed the first taste of air after holding his breath, but there was too much smoke for him to breathe deeply. He let the ground revert as he climbed out behind his two comrades, the three of them crawling on the ground to stay below the smoke. Dessel couldn't see anything except the flames, which were glowing snakes behind a blanket of black smoke. He coughed with Beatrix and Kernich as they got to their feet and ran. They emerged from the smoke to see two Crepan archers staring at them. Dessel didn't understand what he was looking at. Creps would never watch such a sight without taking some form of action. One of them drew an arrow as if to shoot Dessel. He didn't know the word for help, so all he could say was, "Akan Iwa! Don't kill." Kernich moved in front of Dessel and Beatrix. No, he would not take more arrows for them. There was no Caerdulo here to save him, yet it was too late for Dessel to get around the warrior. But the archers fell as Beatrix pained them. They shouted like men, not craps. Dessel made light upon them. Their costumes became obvious. They must have painted their hooded cloaks grey and attached something to them to give their clothing the texture of crepon scales. In the light of day they never would have made it past the perimeter. Their cloaks had swung back, their masks fallen, revealing human faces that Dessel didn't recognize. That meant Micklin and Erwal were probably coming behind them. "Run!" Dessel assumed the lead as Beatrix and Kernich took a moment to get started. Dessel looked back at more men in crepon costumes coming through the smoke. A shout from in front of him made him stop.
"Don't move!"
A beam of white light was too blinding for Dessel to see behind it. The voice sounded familiar, though it wasn't Micklin's.
"I will shoot you if you take one more step. You don't have to die if you give us the Ackerel."
Erwal, Dessel realized. He made light and aimed it upon the mage. Dessel almost never considered the looks of the men he spoke to, but Erwal's ugliness was like a bad smell that couldn't be ignored. He looked even worse than usual with his poor attempt to disguise himself as a crap. Not a poor attempt, Dessel corrected himself. They'd gotten through the perimeter because no crap had put light upon them, and now they were about to surround Dessel's group. He could charge Erwal, but Erwal had the power to destroy not just Dessel, but all three of them with one fireball. Dessel could almost feel Kernich about to sacrifice himself by taking the lead. Beatrix said, "Don't, Kernich." Then she spoke loudly enough for Erwal to hear.
"They've won!"
She gestured to one side, then the other as more men appeared. Half of them had bows with arrows already nocked.
"I see my brother was too much of a coward to come with a lot of you," Beatrix said.
One of the humans in costume took off his mask and pulled down his hood. With Dazzle's light, Micklin's face was clear. It didn't have any sinister attributes on its own, but knowing who he was, a powerful mage eager to kill others for little more than reputation, made Micklin's short hair and trimmed beard distasteful to a point of disgusting. It was almost as if Micklin had purposely wanted his appearance to turn the stomachs of good men. To terrorize, Dessel figured.
"Your brother is back where he's safe," Micklin said. "I will bring you to him alive if you shout out where the Ackerel is. Use Psyche to confirm the truth."
Beatrix took a moment, then said,
"What about Kernich and Dessel?"
"They have the same opportunity that you do. One of you will live. Whoever tells us where the Ackerel is first, I promise this."
"'Don't say anything,'
Koenig muttered. Dessel wasn't sure if it was directed at him, Beatrix, or the both of them. It didn't matter. He was so insulted that he lost his urge to escape as it was replaced with the urge to pummel Koenig.
"'I know all of you want to win the war,' Beatrix announced, "'but do any of you know what Micklin and Erwell are fighting for? It's not for victory.'
The humans in costume looked either at Micklin or Erwell.
"'Whatever you think you know about me, you don't,' Micklin said.
Dessel was surprised even to hear a reply. Psyche must have been involved, for the Pyphorial mage already sounded enraged.
"'I was a child during a war that killed my entire family. I was too young to fight. I trained every day for years and eventually became a Pyphorial mage, second only to Nico and eventually surpassing his skill.' But nothing I could do would bring me back in time to save my family. I tried to do good by getting rid of all criminals everywhere, but I was expelled from the academy for that. Your father saw potential in me, Beatrix, and your brother believes in me now. Like the rest of us here, we fight to make Kiro better.
And what does Alifon's promise to you have to do with making Kiro better?
We all require rewards.
Yes, but only you require the freedom to kill whoever you want.
I will hunt down every criminal until there are none left. It's all I've ever wanted, yet it's never what I've been able to do. I fight in this war.
Micklin looked at the other troops.
All of you have seen me kill our enemies. That's my only wish, to kill the enemies of Kiro until we have none.
A righteous path?
Beatrix said sarcastically.
But how many righteous paths begin with murdering people by surprise?
The following silence amplified her words. Dessel was still on edge, fearful that an arrow or a fireball would strike his party at any moment. But he trusted Beatrix, with her words and psyche, to take control of this situation.
"'What about Erwell?'
she asked the group. "'Do all of you know what my brother has promised him?'
"'A title and land,'
Erwell announced.
"'Yes,' Beatrix said. "'But you're leaving out something.' "'Lyda is a traitor anyway,'
he blurted.
"'She'll be lucky to be alive after we free her from the elves.'
She won't. I'm sure you'll make her wish she was dead.
Dessel wasn't sure he should let himself understand what Beatrix was saying. Of everything that had happened, this promise by Alifon to Erwell might be the most unbelievable.
He poisoned his own father, who he loved, Dessel reminded himself. Anything is possible with Beatrix's brother.
Dessel was sick to his stomach. Not only would they give the Acheril to Alifon, but Lyda would be handed over to Erwell for whatever he pleased. Perhaps she would be better off dead. Dessel's aggression was gone, his mind foggy with gloom. He lost all purpose, the last of his will to live, and the last of his hope. Then he felt Beatrix touch his arm. Clarity returned. Psyche had twisted his emotions, just as it continued to alter the emotions of these men who no longer aimed their bows.
"'I can't keep them this way much longer,' Beatrix whispered.
Dessel thought of something so simple that he was angry with himself for not coming to it sooner. He shouted,
"'Felks! Felks! Felks!'
The fire had probably already drawn Kreps near this location. They just needed a bit more direction to get to the spot. Unfortunately, Beatrix's psyche no longer appeared to work as Erwell pointed his wand with a sharp thrust that could only mean he was about to cast. Dessel made the ground liquid to fall into it with Beatrix and Koenig. The dirt shook violently as Dessel heard the muffled sound of an explosion on the surface. He bumped against Koenig and Beatrix's arms as he did everything he could to keep track of up and down. Their lives depended on it. When the earth stopped rippling, Dessel found the backs of his comrades with his hands and pushed them onward. He didn't know exactly which direction they were headed. It didn't matter, so long as they could move straight and fast. Dessel turned all the dirt to liquid around them except below their feet. With the three of them having practiced this earlier, they moved at twice the speed. He wasn't sure how long Koenig could hold his breath, but it was probably longer than Beatrix given his endurance. The princess eventually reached back around to squeeze Dessel's arm to the point of pain. She couldn't go any longer. Dessel changed the state of the dirt beneath their feet to be hard in an inclination, the rest of the soil above still liquid. It would be unclear if they'd gone far enough. Until they resurfaced. Dessel must have sent them deeper than he meant to as they went upward without breaking through. Beatrix picked up speed in her panic and moved beyond Dessel's reach. He and Koenig sped up and managed to catch up soon after. Dessel realized that it wasn't that they were too deep, but the inclination was not steep enough to get them out quickly. It was already difficult to climb out of this heavy dirt, and it was even more difficult for Dessel to manipulate the land perfectly.
The liquid shifted toward more of a muddy texture as Dessel focused on making the hard inclination steeper. He bumped into Beatrix. She thrashed as wildly as an animal now. Dessel had no choice but to try something else. Koenig seemed to come to the same idea. Perhaps it was even Psyche that allowed it to enter both their minds at the same time. The two of them got their hands around Beatrix's legs and hoisted her up, as Dessel ensured the dirt was hard enough beneath their feet and soft above them. They kept lifting her, eventually pushing her feet until only Koenig could reach them any longer. A bit of light came through as Dessel heard Beatrix gasp. Dirt showered too heavily for Dessel to have a chance to see anything. He kept his eyes shut and his mouth closed as he got behind Koenig and pushed once more. There were indiscernible sounds of clashing and screaming above. As Dessel and Koenig got closer to breaking through the surface, Dessel could make out the sweet sound of Crepan shouts. The urge to breathe was strong, but Dessel knew he could last longer than Koenig, so he let Koenig break through the surface first by giving the warrior a hoist with his shoulder beneath Koenig's rear. Beatrix had been as light as air with Koenig's help, but with Dessel lifting the mountainous warrior on his own, he couldn't get him higher than an inch. A surge of strength came as he pushed Koenig high enough for Dessel to step up, changing the dirt hard beneath his boots. He stepped up again, this time with his other foot as he heaved. Suddenly Koenig became light, his legs lifting on their own. He must have broken through, dirt showering down on top of Dessel's head. He climbed up behind Koenig by shifting the ground beneath each step. Koenig grabbed hold of his hands and pulled him the rest of the way out. The sounds of battle penetrated Dessel's dirt-filled ears. He stuck his head up as dirt cascaded down his neck and into his shirt. He had no weapon as he rose, but that didn't appear to matter. The humans who were masquerading poorly as creps were on the run from the real creatures. Dessel watched as Beatrix took one man down with Psyche, and two creps pounced on him. She tried to tell them in common tongue to leave him alive for questioning, but the human was dead before she could utter two words. Koenig guarded her with his sword out. When Dessel arrived beside the two of them, he mistook Koenig's expression for fear of a hidden ambush. It was only when he spoke that Dessel realized the warrior was instead worried about claiming his own kill.
"We came up too late,"
Beatrix shoved him. He stumbled.
"What's that for?"
"Who were you talking to?" she asked with fury.
"When?"
"You know when."
Dessel's anger came back as he remembered it.
"Don't say anything." "This is not the time to discuss that,"
Koenig said as he glanced around.
"We have to find somewhere safe."
He spat out some dirt.
Chapter 26. It didn't take long to realize that they already were safe. Hundreds of creps had awoken and gathered around the burning house. Dessel had taken a risk to go back in and get their belongings, but now he was glad he had. The ceiling was starting to come down when Rikik arrived with Nebre. Beatrix had refused to speak with Koenig since he'd admitted that he was mostly thinking of her earlier when he'd said not to tell where the Ackerel was. He'd tried to explain himself, but there was no excuse. He claimed that he didn't really believe she would say anything. He just wanted to make sure. Even with her psyche confirming this, it was still an insult. He obviously feared she would turn her back on them and everything they'd gone through to get the Ackerel if her life was at stake. The more Dessel thought about it, the less angry he was. Logically, it would make sense for Beatrix or any of them to value their lives enough to consider Micklin's offer, but Dessel hadn't considered it, nor would he at any future point. Apparently Beatrix hadn't either, and she might not forgive Koenig for a long time for thinking she would. She spoke for the first time in a while when Rikik approached them. Through Nebre, she explained to the Crepan leader that these humans had come here pretending to be creps. They planned to kill her party and any creps that got in their way.
"One crep died," Nebre said to Dessel's shock. "The Pyphorial mage killed him while retreating. We still have his swords."
"He used both of them?" Beatrix asked.
"Yes. Another crep is very injured. She might die like her Seshar."
"That's terrible. Do they have any children?"
"Two,"
Nebre said with a long face, then translated all for his father. Rikik was nodding in the human's direction as his son spoke. He talked to them in Crepan afterward, which Nebre translated.
"I don't have time for you now, humans. We will speak in the arena tomorrow."
Rikik started to leave, but Beatrix stopped him with a question.
"Where are we to sleep?"
Rikik answered only by spitting on the ground.
Nebri stopped as if to answer, but Rikik grabbed his arm and pulled him along.
"They blame us for this?" Beatrix asked Dezel.
"They shouldn't," Kurnish said.
"I'm not talking to you, nor will I until I forgive you."
"I told you I'm sorry. As a psychic, you should forgive easier than most people. You know I'm genuine. I made a horrible mistake."
She didn't look at him.
"Dezel, they blame us for this?"
"I can't tell you. There are no Kreppen customs about what to do when one human invades Kreppen land to kill another human. All I can tell is that they're angry." "What did you feel from Psyche?"
"Only anger."
"I guess we'll find out tomorrow at the arena if they blame us."
"That still leaves the question of where we can sleep, where we'll be safe."
"There's the place we went to,"
Kurnich began.
"You will be on your own tonight," Beatrix interrupted.
"There's a safe for all of us."
"I don't care."
"Beatrix, he's right," Dezel said. She stared at him as if her eyes were daggers, the fire giving everything an orange tinge.
"Then I will be sleeping alone,"
she stormed off. As soon as she left, Kurnich put his hand over his face.
"Why did I say that?"
"Why did you?"
"I figured she was considering it."
"But why?" He sighed as he watched her walk into the darkness.
"She's told me how scared she is about all of this. She thinks we're going to die. I've tried to tell her we're not in that much danger, but..."
He stopped and sighed again. "But what?"
"I shouldn't have said anything to you."
"It's too late now. Finish your thought." Kurnish showed Dezel a look of regret.
"But it's impossible to convince a psychic of anything that you don't firmly believe."
The next day brought heavy rain, yet the Kreps still gathered around the arena in large numbers, shirtless as usual. Dezel spotted a few with cloaks, but none appeared to make an effort to wrap them around their body to shield themselves from the wind and rain. He wasn't sure if they didn't feel it as strongly as he did, or if this was a chance to show strength. Dezel didn't know what Beatrix had done before she arrived at the arena this afternoon. Dezel and Kurnich had trained. From the small bits of conversation between instructions, they came to the conclusion that it was unlikely for Alaphon to put any more of his troops at risk. They'd probably gone back to Kiro by now. Dezel still had hope the Wind Knights would be here soon. Perhaps they were nearby and only waiting for Alaphon's soldiers to leave. Beatrix approached Dezel and Kurnich, but she didn't say anything.
"I'm sorry for my mistake,"
Kurnich told her. She ignored him. He said,
"I can't fight the same if you don't forgive me."
She looked up at him with a scowl, then her gaze shifted to stare at Rikik. She seemed as if she would be silent until Rikik announced the beginning of the event. But the leader of the Krept had been speaking with a group of the creatures for quite some time now. Dezel sensed an announcement about last night's attack would come before the bouts began, but there was no telling when that would be.
"Beatrix, it was a mistake,"
Kurnich pleaded.
"It was done out of fear, as I'm sure any of us can understand. Look at me, please."
She scowled up at him again.
"We've put all of our physical and mental strength toward this one goal," he continued. "Every day has been full of struggles that constantly remind us that death could be approaching. We'll never get any of this time back. It's gone, and so are the futures we expected of ourselves before we left for Caenwyn. But we have captured moments between the struggles."
He took her hand.
"We've found points in time that will live on as memories. That might be the only reason we haven't considered giving up. Life is too short for us to spend our precious time feeling vengeful. You put aside your anger for your brother for a greater purpose, and now I need you to do something even easier. Forgive me, Beatrix. All of this feels secondary to how I feel about you. I think... I love you. I didn't realize until now, but I do. I love you."
Dezel excused himself to give them privacy, as would have been the right thing to do the moment Beatrix had walked over. But he was glad he'd had the chance to hear Kurnich speak, even if it was impolite to eavesdrop. Now he didn't need to hear Beatrix's response. He could tell by the way she kissed Kurnich and gazed with tenderness into his eyes as she spoke that she was telling him she loved him too. Dezel took a risk by entering the circle of Kreps, gathered around Rikik to say something. They stopped their chatter to look at him. He was glad to see Nebri there.
"Allow me to explain what happened last night. And who is to blame?"
"Questions ask soon," Rikik replied. "Wait with humans."
But Dezel didn't want to interrupt Beatrix and Kurnich. He apparently couldn't speak to these Kreps right now, so he left to be on his own, but soon noticed Garegor headed his way. The Krep with his black cloak did not smile at Dezel. An entourage of Kreps followed behind Garegor, a mixture of male and female. All of them had their gazes set on Dezel. Garrigor stopped right in front of Dezel, where he couldn't ignore the crepon mask. One of the females in the group came forward.
"You run in fight?"
she asked with a thick accent. So that's what this anger was about. Now this made sense. Word must have spread that Dezel and the others had fled during the attack. They'd come out of it uninjured, while one crep had died, and another might soon as well. Of course the creps would see them as dishonorable.
"We did not run," Dezel explained. "We had to dodge."
But seeing her confusion, he asked, "Do you know this word?"
"No." "Dodge, like this."
Dezel moved quickly to one side, then to another. "We had to make their attacks miss. They shot fireballs and arrows." The woman didn't seem to understand as she spoke to Garrigor in crepon. Her common tongue was probably worse than Dezel's crepon. The creps chattered amongst themselves, giving looks at Dezel that made it clear they didn't approve of him any longer. Dezel started to think of how he could explain strategic retreat in crepon when Rikik started his announcement. Dezel hurried to join Beatrix and Kernich near Nebra.
"They think we fled during the attack," Dezel informed the couple. "That explains the anger," Beatrix said.
Nebra said,
"My father is explaining to all creps what happened last night."
"What's he saying exactly?" Beatrix asked.
"Humans in costume as creps attacked your home with fire. You ran and shouted. Creps came to fight them."
Nevre paused as he listened.
"Then he describes those injured and killed."
"Let me speak for us,"
Beatrix told Nevre. He shook his head.
"You won't speak unless my father asks you something."
Rikik was in the center of the large arena as he bellowed. Nebre and Dezel's party stood a good distance away, but still close enough to be seen by every crep watching. Dezel had gotten used to the audience until now, when he found malice in their yellow eyes. Rikik finally asked something that Nebre translated.
"Who were these humans?"
"He doesn't know?"
Beatrix asked.
"Don't translate that."
"We know what we know,"
Nebre replied quickly, his voice heavy with anger.
"And we don't know what we don't. You will tell us everything you know, and you won't lie, or you three will be fortunate to leave with your lives."
"Those men are loyal to my brother,"
Beatrix announced with a surprisingly loud voice.
"My brother, the King of Kiro, Alaphon Estlander, sent them here to kill us and steal what we've brought."
The audience was silent even after Nebre translated.
"Why?"
Rikik asked.
"Because my brother is a greedy human fighting a war. He wants all the power he can get. The metal we've brought here..."
She paused. Dezel feared she might finish the sentence. If the creps knew exactly how powerful the Akril was, it would immediately become more valuable than the honor of keeping his party alive.
"The metal is important to many humans," Beatrix continued. "If used in the right way, it has the power to destroy walls. We await loyal humans to come here and help us use it to threaten my brother into ending the war. My brother doesn't want that, and he's shown what he will do to take that power. He tried to kill us, but what's worse is that he invaded Crepan land and killed some of your own. The three of us standing here would never do that, and neither would the humans coming here to help us."
Many of the creps chattered amongst themselves, but they fell silent when Rikik spoke.
"If they are the humans you describe," Nebra said, "then why did you run and not fight?"
"We did not run,"
Beatrix began. But Nebre translated Rikik's interruption before she could continue, and the crowd erupted in anger.
"Creps saw you," Nebre explained. "They were chasing you when our creps attacked them. Do not lie."
"It is not a lie. We were surrounded, so Dezel took us into the ground."
Nebre put up his hand mid-translation.
"I don't understand."
"Dezel, show them with Kernich."
Kernich stepped away from Dezel.
"He can do it on his own. There was dirt everywhere afterward. Everywhere!"
"Just go already,"
Beatrix snapped. Dezel hesitated. Not only was the experience unpleasant, like Kernich described, it was dangerous. But Beatrix had already continued to announce to the creps.
"We were surrounded, and one of their mages shot a fireball at us."
She gestured as if shooting at Dezel with a wand. He and Kernich fell into the liquid dirt and started toward Beatrix, Dezel's hand on Kernich's back. She was more than a few meters away, making their underground trek long. When he felt that they must have passed her by now, he came up behind her and climbed out with Kernich as she continued her story. The The Kreps pointed at Dezel and Kurnish while speaking in murmurs of surprise.
That was when the three of us were going to engage our enemies, but you Kreps had already bravely joined the fight. Our enemies fled from you, and we were too far behind them to help. We were angry we couldn't fight them. We wanted the honor of killing them ourselves.
The Kreps broke out in chatter. Nevrek couldn't translate, for he was busy speaking with his father. Eventually, Rekik asked through his son,
Your brother is at war against King Hothen in Tenred. We know this. So why don't you give the power to destroy walls to King Hothen?
Because he isn't better than my brother. There's no telling what he will do with Kiro once he controls it. He could kill me as well simply because I share the same blood as my brother, his enemy. There is no evidence Hothen would be a good ruler. As the first king to control both Tenred and Kiro, it would be too easy for him to abuse his power.
Well, that may be true, Nebre said before translating any of this to his father. Working with King Hothen is the best way to get justice for us Kreps. His army will kill your brother and his soldiers, or capture them and give them to us.
Why would Hothen work with Kreps?
Because some Kreps would fight with him for justice.
Dezel shot a dire look at Beatrix. These were dangerous words that Nebre was not yet translating to Rikik and the audience, who all could be in agreement. Dezel relaxed when Beatrix put up her hand and showed Nebre a look of confidence. She announced,
If Hothen is about to win the war, my brother is likely to run. He will take those most loyal with him on a ship, the same men who came in here without permission and killed Kreps. But if Alifon can't escape, he will hide until he has a chance to flee. There is no guarantee that the humans responsible for this great dishonor will receive the punishment they deserve unless we are all patient. I know it's more difficult to wait than to fight, but waiting is the right strategy in this situation.
Wait how long? Rikik asked.
Not much longer. I can't give you an exact amount of days, but it should be less than a month now.
What happened before month?
Rikik asked.
We will end the war on our own terms. It's the only way to ensure that we capture the dishonorable humans while keeping ourselves alive. We'll need the continued support of your honorable Kreps, great leader. We need your protection as we build what must be built and fight whoever comes to stop us. It's difficult for all of us to remain patient, but it is the only way.
The skeptical looks on many lizard-like faces showed that a fair number of Kreps were against this idea.
The Kreps' generosity will not be forgotten, Beatrix said with vigor. There will be at least one great battle, I'm sure of it. Let the Kreps with the most strength and courage join us, and they will be rewarded with bastial steel swords. Rikik, you and your Kreps have fought with humans before because of this promise, so you know we stay true to our word. Let your Kreps prove themselves in this arena, and the best will then fight against disrespectful humans to end this war. They will receive bastial steel blades that will stay sharp through endless generations. The Kreps who earn these weapons will live on forever through them. What do you say?
The air in the arena shifted as Nebre finished translating. Every Krep wanted a bastial steel weapon, all volunteering to fight by thrusting their hands in the air as they cheered.
Frikik shouted,
Yiktik! Fight hard!
Beatrix rejoined Kurnich and Dezel. The warrior asked her,
Are you sure we can give them bastial steel?
I'm not even sure we can build this damn thing, let alone use it to threaten my brother. But if we can do all that, we can certainly get bastial steel for these Kreps.
We'd have to actually use the device to make bastial steel, Dezel said.
Yes, so we should all start getting comfortable with that idea.
Beatrix gave him a look from the side of her eyes.
Alifon is not one to back down until he absolutely has to. I would assume Hothen is the same way.
Chapter 27 Rikik surprised Dezel by changing the format of the fighting in the arena. Whoever beat Kurnich, Rikik announced through Nebra, would have the honor of representing the Kreps in the battle to come. Not even the humans here with the Kreps knew when or where the battle would take place, but if everything Beatrix said about her brother was true, then there certainly would be one. Rikik also decided that Kurnich would only fight 5 Kreps each time, but everyone would meet in the arena twice a day. A great disappointment to the audience, Rikik said the weapons would be dull. Dezel saw why this was after watching the first opponent Kurnich had to face. The points she scored against him were strikes to his arms and legs that might have done permanent damage had her blade been sharp. She made all the Kreps before her look slow, and was too fast for Kernich to keep track of all her movements. Her victory elicited cheers. Kernich hadn't seemed close to scoring a point, yet none of the Kreps appeared surprised by this. They cheered even louder when Garrigor was called to fight next. Kernich was cursing throughout the fight as he tried to fend off Garrigor's attacks, but the Krep fought with hands and feet, jumping and cartwheeling, and eventually scored two hits, one downward strike onto Kernich's shoulder, and a strong sweep after catching Kernich's kicking boot. Dazzle never realized just how great his advantage was over his non-magical opponents until he saw Garrigor, one he'd defeated, best Kernich. The warrior, already drenched with sweat, came over to them for a swig of water from the pouch he'd left with Beatrix.
"I've never fought anyone so fast," he grumbled in anger. "I'm getting humiliated."
"You're not. Rikek expected them to win," Beatrix soothed. "He's giving you his best fighters, finally."
"He gave one of them to Dazzle and the boy won."
"You would with Mylon," Dazzle said. "Just do your best," Beatrix said. "This is only about pride now. We already have the Kreps invested in this war. They're not going to throw us out."
Kernich glanced over his shoulder at his next opponent. The Krep awaited him stoically. She did not speak, gesture, or spit, like many of the opponents the previous days. She had a cloak on, like Garrigor, and the female before him. This one was grey with the image of a gaping maw sewn into it.
"Look at the size of that female," Kernich complained.
It was true, this Krep was larger than most males.
"Use your advantage," Beatrix said.
"What advantage? She has power, reach, and speed."
"You're smarter."
She spoke the words as if they were obvious.
"Not smart enough to know how that's going to help me."
"Well then, you'd better figure it out soon. They're waiting."
"Tell me!"
Kernich's voice was severe, but his smile spoke of a jest. Beatrix chuckled.
"You're the master of sword combat, not me."
He grumbled as he turned on his heels and walked with courage toward his opponent. He let out a battle cry as he brought down his weapon, only for it to be blocked. Kernich appeared to have anticipated this, though, using the momentum of his deflected blade to thrust its dulled tip toward the Krep's hip. But the creature spun with a natural quickness, not only avoiding the attack, but striking Kernich in the arse hard enough to knock him on his knees. Kernich looked over his shoulder at Beatrix and Dazzle with an expression that made them both laugh. He put on a look of absolute anger, so extreme, with wide eyes and flaring nostrils, that it couldn't have been natural. He even grinned slightly as he got up.
"He doesn't anger as easily as he used to," Dazzle commented as Kernich engaged the Krep again.
"Mm-hmm," was all Beatrix would say on that matter. Dazzle figured that Kernich's ability to act on his feelings toward the princess had something to do with it. Even losing to these Kreps, he seemed happy. It was obvious the more Dazzle thought about it. If Lyda was here, there would be very few things that could bring him down again. Kernich didn't lose to all five Kreps, fortunately. He did beat the last one, barely. And this Krep wasn't any bigger than Kernich. The creature looked younger than all the other opponents, his smaller muscles still developing. Dazzle asked Nebro about it and found out that the Krep was only 13 in human years. Still, he had scored one point and nearly another, causing Kernich to roll across the ground to avoid a hard slash. Beatrix still had to face 10 opponents, but none of them showed any sign of resistance. Dazzle asked Nebre after she took down her 10th Krep, "Is Rikik choosing the strongest-minded Kreps to face her like he chose the best fighters to face Kernich?"
"Yes. Perhaps there is no hope against Psyche."
The statement shouldn't have caused Dazzle to feel as much fear as it did, but he couldn't help it. He was reminded of the elves, Fathol specifically, and how there were worse threats than Miklin and Erwal. Nebre told Dazzle that he would fight 2 Kreps each time in the arena, so a total of 4 a day now. But with Dazzle's connection to the other plane, he found it easy to tell when the Kreps would change from defensive to aggressive. It was even easier to shift the land beneath their feet. They still had a chance to strike him by jumping when they thought he would turn the dirt to liquid, but he anticipated it each time and avoided it. One Krep nearly scored a hit when he spat in Dazzle's eyes before attacking, but Dazzle's reflexes were sharp enough for him to get out of the way and turn the ground soft. If only he had his mother's ability to make walls of Sasha's energy, then he would be able to defend himself against arrows and fireballs as well as he could against swords. But even if he had that ability, how would he resist Fatal's psychics? How were any of his allies supposed to win a battle against the elves if it came to that? All Dazzle knew was that he had to figure out that answer soon enough. Fatal already knew where they were. Why he hadn't sent Basin here yet was still a mystery.
Bastial hell! Fatal could have invaded with an entire army and probably convinced the Kreps not to take action. What is he waiting for?
With the arena fighting over for the day, Dezzel and the others were escorted to their new home. It was deep within the colony, like the last one, and well protected. And just like the last one, there were three rooms. The entrance room, just after the door, was tiny, basically just a hearth. Two bedrooms made up the bulk of the house, with crunchy and lumpy mattresses that Dezzel was used to by now. "I'm going to speak with Lyda," he told Beatrix and Kernich.
"We should train while there's still light,"
Kernich suggested. "I need to know why Basin hasn't come yet, so we can plan."
"Why would she know?"
"Let him try to find out," Beatrix told Kernich.
The warrior seemed to have some sort of understanding as he leaned back with an open mouth and said, "Ah." Dazzle didn't care if they thought he was just eager to speak to her. He really did need to find out about Basin. He entered the other plane as smoothly as taking a breath. With practice, any difficult task such as this became easy, though he would have to enjoy that realized victory later. He called for Lyda. She was quick to answer.
"Dezzel? Expecting someone else?"
A pulsing light past the horizon showed her laughter.
"I'm happy to speak again. Is there anything urgent you need to tell me?"
"No."
"Good, because I don't want to wait any longer to thank you."
"You don't need to."
"No, but I want to. I'd given up until you forced me to speak with you. Now I have hope again. There's nothing better than regaining it after it was lost."
Dezzel noticed his own energy brightening as joy took over.
"What about freedom?"
"Yes, that would be better," she answered quickly and laughed again.
"After the Wind Knights arrive, we'll figure out how to get you out of there. I believe they will be here soon."
"They will."
"Are you hopeful, or do you know this somehow?" Dezzel asked.
"I know from Fathal. He's waiting until the Wind Knights get there to send my father. His elves watch them. They should arrive tomorrow."
The tone of her voice, or in this plane the dark tinge of her energy, made her disappointment apparent.
"What is your father going to do?" Dezzel asked.
"Fatal hasn't allowed me to speak to him, but I still think I know. He will take the Akril from you if he's able to and bring it to Fatal. Dezzel, promise me that you will not let him do that."
Dezzel didn't answer as he thought that over.
"No matter what," Lyda continued, "even if you have to stop him through force, you can't let him take the Akril. We have all gone through too much for it to end up in Fatal's possession."
Dezzel still didn't answer.
"He could use the weapon against humankind," Lyda implored.
"Why does Fatal want to wait for the Wind Knights to arrive before he forces your father to come here and take the Akril?"
"Because he figures you have hid the Akril as you wait for the assistance you need to build the weapon. Only once it's exposed will my father have a chance to take it. There will be no more waiting once the Wind Knights arrive. You must act quickly to stop the war, and Fathol knows this. The Akril will be in the open."
"I see."
"Damn." "Are you going to promise me?" Lyda asked.
"I'm not sure yet. What is Fathol going to tell Basin to convince him to take the Akril?"
"That he will kill me if my father does not obey. I don't know how much time he will give my father. It could be one day or three, but I doubt more than that. It won't be enough time to build the weapon and threaten the elves with it, which is the only other way they will release me."
Dezzel was scared to ask, but he had to.
"You really believe Fathol will kill you?"
She didn't answer for a while.
"I'm not sure anymore."
Dezzel figured it was a lie. Fathol would kill her.
"I will think of something," Dezzel said. "No one is going to die, and we will keep the Akril. That is my promise."
The red and blue colors of her energy came out like sunbeams over the horizon.
"I don't think I should believe you, but I can't help it," she said. "I don't know what I've done to deserve your help."
"You would do the same for me."
"I would, Dezzel. But isn't that a little mad?"
"No,"
he told her firmly. "When we first started sharing memories in Lake Kavel, I knew we would be involved in something much larger than the two of us. I wanted to seek you out, but I didn't know how. It wasn't until your father found me and requested my help that I could find you. I never thought about abandoning you, and I especially won't now. That would be more than a little mad."
There was no answer for a while.
He started to fear he had upset her.
"I wish I was there with you," she finally said.
"You will be soon."
There was another long silence.
"I do believe that. Thank you, Dezzel."
When Dezzel returned to the physical plane, he cursed. He should have told her how much he wished for her to be here as well. He thought about going back just to say the words. He spoke them in his mind to hear how they sounded. I wish you were here with me also, Lyda. It would have been the right response at the time, but now it would just be awkward. He had to let her out of his mind, for now. The Wind Knights were coming tomorrow, as well as Basin, to take the Ackerel, and he'd promised Lyda he would figure out a plan.
Chapter 28 The commotion within the Crepan colony made it clear that the Wind Knights had arrived. Every Crep grabbed their weapons and ran toward the southern border. Dezzel sprinted ahead of Beatrix and Kernich, as it was more of a priority to get to the Wind Knights as soon as possible than it was to stay together. Fortunately, the Creps were not fighting with the humans when Dezzel made it to the border and pushed through, but he did witness something almost as bad. A line of perhaps 50 humans stood behind Adria's mother, Rila Polkan, as she was passing swords into the hands of the Creps in front of her. They were clearly meant as gifts, but the Wind Knights didn't appear to realize, like Dezzel did, that they would need to keep those weapons.
"Wait," Dezzel told Rila, "you can't give away any more swords."
"We can, and we must." She handed off another sword to a Crep.
"We're going to need them all.
We already brought weapons for ourselves that we won't be giving away."
"I figured, but we still need them all. Please trust me. I will explain later."
She looked into his eyes, then sighed and nodded.
"And we're going to have to take back the weapons we gave them," Dezzel told her.
"You must be joking," it was Adria's voice.
Dezzel was so happy to see her, he almost threw his arms around her right then. He didn't realize how worried he'd been that something had happened to her in one of the battles. His mind had been too occupied with other worries until now.
"You do trust me, right, Adria?"
She let out a breath of resignation.
"Yes."
"How do you plan to explain taking back our gifts to the Creps?" Rila asked.
Dezzel looked around for Nebra. He and Rikik weren't here yet, though Beatrix and Kernich were just pushing through.
"We'll have to wait for their translator."
"I can translate," Rila said.
"That's wonderful." Dezzel was already feeling relief, and the Wind Knights had only just arrived. It went away as he noticed the Creps showing off their new swords to their jealous brethren. At least there would be some Creps happy to see these gifts taken back.
"The Creps know all about the Wind Knights and what we're trying to accomplish together. Introduce yourselves and say a mistake has been made. You need these weapons to train. It's the only way to meet your potential in the arena."
Rila paused mid-translation to stare at Dezzel.
"The arena?"
He figured he had told them to trust him enough already, so he said it only with his eyes.
"All right,"
Rila agreed, then translated the rest. Her Crepan was much better than Dezzel's, guttural like a Crep and with solid flow. His relief returned. The Wind Knights not only made all of this possible, but the load on Dezzel's shoulders was finally gone. The Creps held their gifted swords tighter by the time Rila was done. Other Creps started gesturing at the weapons as they spoke harshly. None of the Creps wanted to be the first to give back their gift. One of them stepped toward Rila and announced something. It sounded like a challenge. All the Creps became boisterous. The rest of the Wind Knights behind Rila came closer as she explained what he'd said.
"Humans are not allowed into Crepan territory without proving themselves."
"Did you tell them who you are?" Dezzel asked.
"Yes, they don't seem to care."
Rikik finally arrived and spoke loudly, silencing the hundreds around him. But soon a few spoke back. More joined in. They pointed at the humans and at the swords, no doubt explaining what had happened. Rikik gestured for Rila to approach, bending his claw toward him. She did so without hesitation, bowing her head when near. She spoke in Crepan. Dezzel recognized Cleve's name, but not much else. It was still easy, however, to determine that Rila was telling Rikik that Cleve could not come. The Crepan leader frowned at hearing the news. The two of them spoke for a little while, sometimes gesturing at Dezzel, other times at the swords. Rila returned to her Wind Knights, smiling.
"We need a simple demonstration to prove to the skeptical Creps that we are as powerful and honorable as Beatrix has described. Nico, have something you can do?"
"Of course."
Before Dezzel could object, Nico took to the air with pyphorial energy. In the right light, Dezzel could see it wrapped around his torso like a shirt. He flew over the Creps and pulled two swords out of his sheaths. He let them go as he spun, the swords rotating around him in the air with precise control. The Creps were not impressed. They yelled to each other as a few took out arrows and loaded them onto their bows. Most of the Creps around them tried to stop them from shooting, but some aggressively pushed their kin away as they lined up a shot.
"Some think he's Micklin,"
Beatrix was first to shout. She ran toward the nearest creps with her hand out, paining them to keep them from shooting. This turned every crep against the humans, hundreds barreling toward Beatrix and the others. Reela screamed, "Don't take out your weapons! Psychics, pain them all!" The creps fell, all of them shrieking so loud that Dezel's ears stung. Reela yelled in Crepan as the spells of pain came to an end, the creps slowly getting up. One of the Wind Knights stepped in front of Reela with a shield as an arrow banged off it. Reela didn't appear frightened as she continued to yell. Soon Rikki came forward with his hands up, standing in front of Reela and turning toward his creps. He shouted louder and longer until all of them dropped their bows and threw their gifted swords in the dirt. It took a while in the following silence for it to be clear that it was over. The creps separated to make a path for the Wind Knights. None seemed keen on the idea of allowing the humans into their colony, staring with watchful eyes. But at least there was no spit. Reela asked Dezel, "Now will you explain why we had to take back the weapons?"
"Yes, and we don't have much time."
As Dezel, Beatrix, and Kernich had figured, the Wind Knights were capable of everything needed to build this weapon. They all got to work quickly before even finding out where they would be sleeping. The Akril needed to be unburied, finally broken out of the bottles after so long, and smelted so it could be shaped accordingly. The apple seeds also had to be planted. Dezel was glad to let Stefan Durabi take charge of this. Dezel had heard of him before, though the two had never met. Stefan was the chemist Basin went to for the Akril melting substance they had used to get all of this Akril from the Dyrek Mountains into the bottles they brought across worlds.
"Why haven't you planted the seeds yet?" Stefan asked Dezel when he handed over the pouch.
They hadn't so much as greeted each other yet, though Dezel didn't feel that the question was malicious. It seemed more curious than anything.
"I didn't want to put them in the ground where they wouldn't grow. I worried it would ruin them, and we can't exactly get more."
"They grow anywhere, and they grow fast. They also kill anything growing nearby." Stefan started to dig a hole near the northern wall of Dezel's home.
"You're going to bury them there?"
"One of them. I will dig separate holes for each one, in case one doesn't grow."
"Shouldn't it be farther from my house?"
"There will be a wall between you and it. You will be fine."
But Stefan paused as he seemed to be judging the location again.
"Perhaps a little more distance would be prudent."
Stefan walked a bit farther before digging. Dezel looked around, wondering what he should do to help, when he saw Adria approaching.
"Have you spoken with Lyda?" Adria asked.
"Every night."
Her eyes brightened.
"How is she?"
"Better than she's been. But we still need to get her out of there as soon as we can."
Adria nodded.
"What's your plan?"
Dezel wasn't sure how to break the news to her.
"You always have a plan," she said.
"I do. But it depends on a few things. We first have to see what Basin will do when he arrives."
"Lyda told you he's coming?"
"Yes. But there is something we must do before he arrives. It's why we took back the swords from the creps. We need the metal."
He went on to describe what he hoped to accomplish with the help of the Wind Knights. Adria brought her mother over to include her. After Dezel had explained it to Reela, she took a few moments to ponder.
"If you're wrong," Reela said, "much of our resources and time will have gone to waste."
"Do you think I'm wrong?"
Dezel genuinely wanted to know, for he trusted Reela's opinion.
"No. But I will take care of it from now on. Thank you for everything you've done. I'll let you know if anything else is needed."
She walked off to speak to the first creps she saw. Dezel was left with Adria. He knew many men might have been upset for control to be taken from them, but he felt the opposite in this case. He grinned wide at Adria.
"I'm relieved you and the Wind Knights are finally here.
I just hope there's no battle while we're gone."
His relief faded. It seemed silly to forget even for a moment what was at stake.
"What happened since we last spoke on the Fjallion Mountains?"
She suddenly seemed surprised.
"I had nearly forgotten what you did. I thought you might have died on the way to the water. I watched you slide down the mountainside with Micklin chasing you. I think I saw you jump off and grab his cloak to pull him into the water with you. I didn't have a spyglass, so it was difficult to tell. Micklin wouldn't speak to me about what happened, so I figured he had failed to kill you. What happened?"
"I did pull him by his cloak. I was going to drown him, but he locked my wrists with pyphorial energy and started to swim up. Some gigantic beast passed by underneath us. It was bigger than any whale. I don't think it felt us nearby. We were too small."
"Was it long? With scales?" she asked.
"Yes. You know what it is?"
"A storm blow. They don't usually come close to the surface, but their disruption of the water from far below can capsize ships."
The current it caused pulled us apart, and nearly drowned me. So that's what Micklin was talking about when I heard him tell Erwell that a sea beast saved you.
It saved him, not me.
Are you sure?